Welcome back to The Fire Break. I'm Steve Wolf. As you know, The Fire Break is sponsored by Team Wildfire, developing some innovative new technology to combat the worst elements of wildfire, which are the parts that hurt people and their property. You can check us out at teamwildfire.com. Okay, but no matter how amazing, you know, what we might do internally, it pales in comparison to what the world is going to do, right? Because there's thousands of inventors and innovators out there working on the same problem and lots of other problems too, because, you know, people like to solve problems. It's kind of the thing that distinguishes us from other species that we, you know what, I'm giving us too much credit. I'm saying we can think ahead and we can plan out. We don't do it, right? We solve what's in front of ourselves that day. And, you know, occasionally we have insight to think forward. But one of the people leading the charge for forward thinking problem solving is Andrea Santi, who's here with me today. And Andrea is the project director for the XPRIZE Wildfire Prize. Andrea, welcome to The Fire Break. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Tell me what you're working on.
Well, working on a four-year, $11 million competition to end destructive wildfires. So, you know, I am part of the XPRIZE Wildfire team. I serve as the program director. Just joined XPRIZE this past year and have been just having a really great time working on this competition, which, as you noted, is innovative, exciting, forward-thinking, and building a great community of innovators.
Well, you're coming to this from the right place, having worked for the World Wildlife Fund, worked for Smithsonian, and you've got quite the pedigree coming in. How does that, you know, influence the way you think about Wildfire XPRIZE?
That's a great question. So my background's actually international relations, so I am not a wildfire expert. We have Jay Stalnecker, who's our technical lead, who brings in the fire experience. From my point of view, a lot of this is that we need really different ways of seeing problems. And so I really bring that interdisciplinary approach to the work, which I think is a great fit for XPRIZE, because we need to have so many different skill sets, mindsets, and just approaches to be able to get to the solutions that we're looking for. I've spent, you know, decades working with scientists around the world. And many of those scientists have, as kind of the years went by, were using a lot of the same technology. So whether it's remote sensing, satellite detection, starting to dabble into drones, you know, there's just a lot of parallels for the ways that you would address a lot of conservation issues to the way that we see teams looking at trying to address wildfire.
So when you see a lot of people using the same technology, does that create the risk that if we're all looking at things the same way and using the same technology, we all come up with this pretty much the same answer, and that limits the scope of answers that the world has to work with versus people who are doing something like totally unique? Gee, you're the only person doing that, or you're the only person who thought of that, and how that enriches the pot of ideas?
The field. I mean, I think that these are all really still new technologies that are being used in new ways. And for both of these competitions, we're really pushing the boundaries of what's possible. So, well, yes, there's science behind it, and there are different approaches and techniques. This is really looking at where do we move forward faster. XPRIZE is the global leader in designing and running big competitions. And one of the things that they really pride themselves on is the ability to either kind of spur innovation in an area where there aren't enough innovators, or being able to move those innovators faster. And with XPRIZE Wildfire, as you guys know, because you're part of, you are a team and you know where you were before, we're really kind of in that ladder. We're really trying to move the community at a faster rate, so that we can get to these solutions, because they're, you know, they're already needed. We wish we had them. I would say, you know, there's always a lot of space for innovation. I don't think that those overlaps are going to be a deterrent. I think it really allows us to learn from what's working and then move forward and apply tech in interesting new ways.
And it's interesting what we think of as new technology now. Because what you and I might think, like, wow, drones, that's modern. To my kid who like had a drone since he was three, like that's not new or innovative. But when we work in solving large problems through large organizations, the definition of innovative is a little looser because it takes time for new tech to seep its way into,
Yeah,
into
into
older
the everyday.
organizations, right?
De definitely. And I think that that's really what I've seen with kind of that work before, there was satellite detection, whether it was looking for species. There were team, folks I worked with that were doing drones and surveys, years ago. But I think that it's both the kind of how the technology is changing and how much more precise and accurate it can be, how much easier it is to use, the cost is coming down. And so you see kind of where there was that earlier, those early adapters, and then kind of where we're really trying to move, which is to make these the new tools that every fire service would be able to have around the world so that they are, informed with the very best information.
So there's you, it sounds like you're describing that as the technology becomes more democratized and is accessible in the hands of more people, you'll see that technology being used in more innovative, creative ways because it's not limited to just a few people who have access to it. You put that technology in the hands of every fifth grader in the world, boy, sit back and watch the creative ideas that come.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That is definitely true that as you get more users, you're going to see more innovation. For XPRIZE Wildfire, one of our goals is global availability. And so, really looking at how teams will be challenged to identify and push towards that global availability. And so, that's cost effectiveness, that's functionality, making sure there's two tracks. And so, I'm generalizing a little bit and kind of lumping pieces together, but across both of them, really looking at ensuring that these are going to be solutions that can work anywhere and for anyone.
So why don't we dive down those two tracks and lay out for us, what exactly is XPRIZE Wildfire specifically? Like, what is the challenge that's been posed that you're asking innovative teams to solve?
Yeah, great. So, XPRIZE Wildfire, as I started, is a 4-year competition with an $11 million prize to spur innovative technology for firefighting. And the end goal is to end destructive wildfires. We recognize this is not about ending every wildfire. Fire is very important in fire-adapted ecosystems. And so we want those ecosystems to thrive. We want more good fire. But we also know that with, because of my background, climate change is a driving force towards many of these challenges. And so with that, being able to really have the best tools and technology to address it. We've got two tracks. We have the space-based wildfire detection and intelligence track, and then the wildfire autonomous response track. And those two are different in that one, as the name says, is space-based detection. So teams need to be able to find every fire over a large area. They need to do their detection in a minute, then they have 10 minutes to transmit that information and the finding the right fires to those fire managers on the ground with an easy-to-use interface. On the other track, the autonomous wildfire response, it's a little bit more kind of open-ended. Teams have 10 minutes to find a fire, get to a fire, and put it out autonomously.
And can they converge? You can
So,
use the space part for the detection and then relay that information to the autonomous ground part that could respond and suppress.
in the autonomous wildfire response track, the detection is open-ended, and so
Okay.
the teams will decide how they feel they will be able to most, quickly detect those fires. So yes, they could.
Okay.
There's, that one's open-ended. On the other track, though, we are asking for space-based detection. So Earth observations do have to be from space. And teams don't have to have their own satellite. They can either have a satellite, they could have a payload on someone else's satellite, or they could use third-party and open-source Earth observation
Existing,
data.
right.
It's
NASA
right.
satellites or Aurora Tech or whoever's got something up there that works for them.
Exactly.
I see. Okay. And on the autonomous response part, you know, what exactly is the physical challenge? Like, how big is the area that you have to detect within, and how long do you have to put the fire down? And what defines down?
Yeah. So some of the details will come out later. But the it is a 1,000 square kilometer area, and teams will need to be able to find an incipient fire. With both of the tracks, they need to be finding and reducing false positives.
Okay.
And so making sure they're finding the right fire.
Constructive fire, not the campfire with the Girl Scouts around it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly, right. No one's barbecue. We don't want to have, you know, technology coming in and putting out a barbecue. And so with that, it is, again, 10 minutes. So teams have 10 minutes to find the fire, get to the fire, and suppress the fire.
And how suppressed is suppressed? No, does that mean no visible flames, or does that include the mop up after and putting out the burning peat 6 feet underground? And
we will be providing more information as it comes, but you know, it's great to be able to have those questions coming in. Sure. And we do, for any teams out there that are listening, we do have a Q&A document that's within the system where teams can ask questions, and we provide responses. As you know, I shared kind of before we started, we have to make sure that all information gets out to teams at the same time. And so that is one of the tools that we are using to be able to communicate out to teams.
Well, all the teams are listening, so you're speaking to them all right now. But so I, you know, when I first read XPRIZE Wild, you know, the Wildfire XPRIZE, and I saw, you know, 1,000 kilometers square. So that's basically like 23 by 23 miles, give or take. So that means that depending on where you start, you might start in one corner and the fire might be diagonally up in the other corner. Because, right, assuming the worst case scenario, it's you know, the furthest away from you. So then I thought, well, what are the logistics of that? You know, you might be detecting a fire that's up to 23 miles away. You need a couple of minutes to detect it, monitor it, discern it from other non-threatening fires, cover the distance, and then apply whatever your suppression technology is. And that could mean that you could be having to move in excess of 300 miles an hour. So this would eliminate a lot of existing tech. And so my first thought was, can't be done. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute, they tricked me. That's the whole purpose of the XPRIZE, is for us to take the things that we thought couldn't be done and move them to, okay, well, if they could be done, what would that technology look like? And so in that sense, I thought perhaps what appeared to be the naivete of the question, or the way the problem was framed, actually was serving the purpose of spurring like very, very new ways of thinking about it. You know, when I started to think, well, maybe we're not going to be able to scramble, you know, aircraft and get there and knock the fire out in 10 minutes. You know, maybe we need a missile, you know, and then the missile is full of suppression agent and you give it the coordinates and it, you know, rockets in there. And then, and I'm just telling you my process because I think other people are probably thinking the same way. And then I thought, you know, if this wasn't a civilian problem, but if it was a military problem, you'd see much better funding and resources provided towards a technology that could do that. Cause we already have missiles that could, you know, you give it the coordinates and it goes there really fast and does whatever, you know, it's supposed to do.
Right.
So there might be some hybridization between mil tech and commercial tech. And then last week when the wildfire hit the panhandle in Texas and threatened the nuclear missile factory, then I thought, you know, now, like, people will start to recognize that it's not just a civilian problem. It's not just landowners, homeowners, farmers, HOAs that are destroyed. Like, it's a military problem as well. And to the degree that it is, then we should see some military spending moving into that area and the opportunity for transfer technology from things that get developed with military budgets, then being able to serve, you know, civilian firefighting market. So I think what you're doing is really going to inspire like huge positive change.
Yeah.
And it's necessary, right? Because fire is not increasing, you know, at a Oh, I forgot my math words. You know, or it's like the exponential one, not the linear one.
It's not incremental, right?
So the solutions also have to be exponential.
Exactly. I think that your point to kind of what is the trajectory, very much TBD to see, because those are not decisions that we're making at XPRIZE. But the goal of XPRIZE is to be able to demonstrate that the technology works. And so that is why we do a live demonstration, wanting to be able to show that it is at a stage that it is ready to start to be scaled and used. I mean, it's important that our fire service really has the trust in the technology that's coming out. And so that's a big factor for us, is just trying to look at what are the different ways that we can ensure that fire service is engaged early, that we have that connection and input from the end users.
Yep.
And then, you know, to your point, is kind of who will those end users be? It could be more than just, you know, it will be local, municipal, federal. We will see kind of who else jumps in to look at.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you talk about different levels of local government, that expands out internationally, not just to local foreign governments, but to the idea of international cooperation on these fires, because it's not really the case, you know, anymore. Now that we recognize that there's only one atmosphere, you know, we can't say, oh, that fire up there, that's a Canadian problem. Like, it was the whole East Coast problem, right? And
I think that was a real eye opener. I mean, I'm right here outside Washington, D.C., and we are not in a wildfire hotspot necessarily. The East Coast is starting to change in terms of, you know, this past few months ago, the East Coast was where most of the wildfires were happening in the U.S., which, you know, it was unusual or new for me. So I think that how extreme these wildfires are and the impacts really are just so far reaching. And so everyone is paying attention.
I think if
talk about emergency stuff, my generator just turned on because it's
that's great.
And it, weekly it test.
Your internet didn't shut off. So great. You're not getting the incoming missiles siren, are you?
No. Good. But, you know, being from Washington, D.C.,
that's why I asked.
We're kind of used to some of the different flyovers and things like that.
So do you think that we might, given that wildfires now impact across national borders, that we might see more international response, more formalized, not just like Canada says, hey, you guys have some people to send up here, but, you know, international strike teams that respond because those fires, you know, threaten large areas and because local response teams might not be adequate to the task?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's already happening in so many parts of the world. You have, when you have these extreme fires, you have the fire services from around the world jumping in to help. I mean, we know that there is going to be, both for XPRIZE Wildfire, but just in general, there's a lot of collaboration. There is a lot of different initiatives that are happening outside XPRIZE, where it is bringing community together to share those lessons learned. I mean, just in the past few months, we've had so many different places that have had these extreme wildfires. I've been to the Valparaiso, the Viña del Mar area of Chile. And so when that fire was hitting, I was like, oh my gosh, I've been there. Not a place, kind of like Maui, not a place where I would have imagined a wildfire coming through that was so extreme, because it's such an urban area. And so, you know, we're just seeing wildfires that are so different from the wildfires of the past, not necessarily forested. And, you know, from my background, this has been a really interesting area for me, looking at things like invasive grasses that are providing the fuel.
Yeah, well, those grasses have been there for years and nobody complained until it was a wildfire, right? You know, I live in Boulder and I can look out my living room window and I watched the Marshall Fire. You know,
wow. And I'm sure that was a really hard experience.
Well, it was a wildfire where the houses were the trees.
Yeah.
The behavior was wildfire. It was just the feedstock for the fuels was houses rather than trees for the most part. But I think we're going to be seeing all kinds of new stuff like that. And maybe the most dangerous threat is the expectation that things are going to be the way they've been, and that responses that worked in the past, you know, need to be made bigger rather than redefined, because the problem's getting bad faster, right?
And I mean there's so many different approaches, and I, you know, again, from my background looking at these questions of prescribed burns and really addressing the landscape first and looking at what can we do to just create resilient areas. So there's so many different layers for XPRIZE wildfire. Our approach, as you know, is really looking at that early detection. If we can find fires when they're small, the resources to address them will not need to be so significant. And so being able to find them in remote places, being able to have technology that could address a wildfire on its own. I mean, these are things that are not yet there, and it's not going to be XPRIZE ends and all of the technology is suddenly implemented, but many of the competitors are already working with fire service. Their solutions are being deployed now. We just saw just last week, there was an announcement down in Hawaii that one of the competitors, their solution was being deployed. And so that's great for us to be able to see that, you know, these are solutions, different pieces of it that are already needed and utilized and can help us inform where fires are starting. And then at least for the autonomous one, it's really taking that beginning to end and creating, removing those silos from the detection to the response to the suppression, really integrating it into one. And so that was an intentional desire of the competition, was to provide that full response in such a speedy timeline. I mean, what's challenging, you know, the 10 minutes is the challenge, but it's also that integration of the systems.
Yeah, and you know, I also wouldn't want people to get too much confidence in the idea that early detection is the most important thing, because sometimes you have fires that have incredibly high, you know, rate of spread. You get a down power line in 100 mile an hour wind, you know, 10 minutes later, you've got an unmanageable fire. So it's, you know, and if it happens in an urban area, there's not detection's not even an issue. People saw it happen. People are on their cell phone 10 seconds later. So just because you see it right away, you know, like, that doesn't mean that you have the technology to manage that fire, unless you have, you know, a physical response, you know, in addition to this digital infrastructure support.
Right. There's no one silver bullet.
Not at all.
And I think that, you know, that is part of where we're not trying to replace, but add to that toolkit. Because we do know we're going to need all of the resources at hand, plus what's to come.
And more. That's right. Yeah. If we combined all the resources we have, we know they're still not adequate to the task of some of the fires that we're seeing.
Yeah.
You know, that were rarities and that aren't going to be, they're not going to be rarities for long, right? We're going to see massively destructive fires all
right. That is the trajectory, is that it's going to get worse before it gets better. And so I think that that's where it feels really meaningful to be part of something that is looking to try to move quickly, when we know that we're already behind. You know, we've already, like, we wish we had all of this 10 years ago. How would things potentially be different? But to be able to move fast, and that's really where the teams come in. This is all going to be about how quickly teams can get their technology developed, get it tested, be ready and able to compete. And I
And
think that's no small challenge.
no.
I'd love to hear kind of how you're feeling about it.
Well, first of all, I wanted to give you a chance to speak about what the additional benefits to being associated with XPRIZE are,
Sure.
because I can tell you it ain't the 11 million bucks. You know, 2 years ago, before I was a founder, I thought, wow, that's a lot of money. And now I realize, oh my God, you could go through that, you know, in months of R&D, and that's certainly not going to cover the cost of creating a solution that's going to, you know, make a dent on wildfire. You know, that's maybe what, 18 months of runway for a company that's doing, you know, intensive R&D. So the benefit of participating in XPRIZE, like, is it's not the prize money.
Right.
It's participating with other people to work on something that's really important to all people.
Yeah.
And you know, and then the other benefits that XPRIZE and the foundation provide.
Yeah, well, I mean, you
The
said it.
publicity,
Thank you.
right?
You're doing a great job sharing out what are the benefits. So, I mean, I do think that building that community is a really big part. Being able to know that, I mean, one, we're trying to galvanize those people who are already working on this problem, as well as those individuals that have knowledge, you know, they're developing tools that they go, oh, wait, this could be used for wildfire too. And so it's building the community, expanding the community, strengthening the community. And then, you know, also this ability to validate tech. I mean, what we've heard from a lot of teams is that the chance to come and test their technology in a real fire scenario, it's just really a challenge to put on your own, especially given all the different regulatory barriers. And so that is a big piece to XPRIZE that for all of our competitions, being able to create that level playing field, and the playing field as it is. You know, we've got a lot of partners coming on. And I think that that's going to be really exciting for competitors to be able to learn about whether it's different resources that they have access to, you know, just access to experts. And then, you know, the money is, as it says in the guidelines, you know, it is distributed along the way in different rounds. Absolutely, it is not, you know, gonna fully fund anyone to get all the way through. It is a part of the solution. And we do hope that teams are gonna be able to leverage everything that they need. Sorry, I've got like here,
That's all
there,
right.
and everywhere at the moment.
Yeah. And also, you know, teams are going to meet other teams,
Yeah, they
and the
will.
confluence of those ideas is going to create, you know, a whole new ideas. I've got the peanut butter, you've got the chocolate. Hey, let's make it work, right?
Yeah, well, and speaking of timelines, if I can just pull on that. So we will be announcing our first down select in a few weeks. So as everybody knows who's read through the competition guidelines and the timeline, Track A, our space-based track, they submitted their qualifying technical submissions on February 1st. There will be judging happening, and then in April, at the FDIC conference in
Boise
Indianapolis,
or yeah.
we'll be announcing the teams that have moved through the qualifying technical submission. And so we're really excited to be able to, you know, get there. Hopefully, we'll see some teams that are there. And after the announcement, the next opportunity for those Track A teams is going to be a team summit. So currently, as the guidelines say, planned for this summer. So that will be coming out. And then Track B follows the same trajectory, just a couple months behind.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So zoom out for me a little bit and just tell me about the history of XPRIZE itself, how the idea came about, how it's funded, managed, what was the germinal idea
Yeah,
behind
so
XPRIZE going back prior to wildfire?
I do not remember the name of the prize, but it was inspired by Charles Lindbergh and his flight across the Atlantic. Which very similar to ours, that, you know, it wasn't the money that was going to be the only thing. It was both being able to prove that you can do it, be part of a group that is taking on a really grand challenge, and the ability to just demonstrate that and say, hey, I'm going to be the first to do this. And so Peter Diamandis, our founder of XPRIZE, was really inspired by that story. Was very keen to try to understand what would happen, like wanting to be able to get to space. And so the very first competition was then Sari Prize, which challenged teams to be able to go orbit the Earth twice, come back, live for, I think it was 48 hours. Right. And that competition really spurred a lot of what we've seen right now in private space flight, but just also the innovation across, launches in general.
We've never seen companies do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Launch, come back, refuel, and relaunch.
Mm-hmm. And even with our space-based competition, I think that a lot of what we're seeing now probably wouldn't be possible had we not had some of those big leaps 30 years ago. And it is XPRIZE's 30th anniversary.
Wow.
I know, right? So yeah. 30 years, 30 prizes, 519 million in launched prizes. So not yet awarded, because right. A lot of these prizes have just launched. But we have, we're really excited that this is such a big year for XPRIZE. We've got wildfire, rainforest, carbon removal. We just launched our health span. We just launched water scarcity, and there are more competitions coming.
So, not to ruin any prizes, but do you think that there could, do you envision that it's possible that there's something more efficient at carbon removal than a tree?
I'm not going to delve into the depths. Trees are really important. I worked for many years on restoration efforts with World Wildlife Fund. I think that, there's a lot of challenges. Like, one of the things that we found, it is not that easy to plant and grow a tree, and you have to know which tree in the right place. Yeah. There's soil, there's so many different variables that come into play. And what we're seeing, I can go down a rabbit hole on this because, we're looking at eucalyptus that has been planted in a lot of places. And what's it leading to? Well, those are trees that burn. And if you're putting right. them in ecosystems that were not meant to burn. And so I think that there are a lot of different pieces to these puzzles. I mean, Earth is a really, really complex environment. And
right.
Humans, we're still just learning what's the right thing to do, what's the best approach. And so I think that carbon removal is a really great opportunity for us to speed up what we know we need to have happen. And so we've got this, again, as an additional tool in the toolbox. It's not replacing restoration or reforestation efforts. It's a right. complement.
Yeah.
In part because the timelines, I think, are just really great when it comes to natural resources.
Yeah. And it's always fun when we think we know what problem needs to be solved.
And then you ask a scientist,
and we solve it,
and we'll all give you a different answer.
And then all of a sudden, and then 20 years later, we see the unintended consequence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, we're going to introduce this fish to this area to help eat these algae. Mm-hmm. And now, right. So,
right.
Grow more panda, grow more eucalyptus, grow more pandas. And now that everyone can have a panda, China loses all its diplomatic leverage in providing pandas to zoos. Right?
Well, Washington our pandas just went back. So that's a very dear. I heard that they might come back again, which everybody would be.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
But maybe we could get our own pandas now.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard of a panda. Uh-huh. I mean, I do not want to support anything that is wildlife trade.
There you go.
That is a big, serious problem, and we know that it is one of the top five most significant crimes.
And we really don't think about the wildlife cost mm-hmm. when we think about wildfire. as much, right? We think about the built environment, and when we prioritize the values at risk of an advancing fire, you know, it's really
we don't
see the flora and fauna cost listed on there, you know, in the top five.
Yeah, I mean, Australia, I think, was such a kind of example of what extreme wildfires can do for biodiversity. But I think the other part of this is that, you know, so many of the problems, whether for wildfire, are also human made.
Yes.
85-90% of wildfires are started by people or infrastructure. And so I think that just being able to really understand kind of what role we play, which, you know, human cause, but we are also leveraging humans to be able to solve it. And that's the beauty of the human mind. We've got amazing people with great ideas.
Yeah, right. If we could solve 90% of the problems that we create, the remaining 10% is probably still enough to wipe us out.
Right,
but,
that's our
cycle. but slower, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're an ingenious species,
but
I would think that most planets would be better off without us.
Tell me a little bit more about your team.
Team Wildfire is a, you know, engineers, fire chiefs, fire-related people, right? And our unique take on wildfire was that most of what we do to fight fire doesn't do much at all, because the dominant influence on a fire is the wind. And that until you could control the wind, you know, you're just spreading chemicals and putting people at risk. So our idea was, you know, how could we control the wind? And we thought if we mounted jet engines to trucks, then we could generate 200-mile-an-hour winds in any direction where we needed them. And that if you imbued the exhaust with retardants, then you basically have a hurricane on wheels. And, you know, when I was doing my preliminary research on, you know, what's it going to take to get wildfires under control, firefighters, you know, they laughed and they said, it would take a hurricane. And I said, okay, thanks for that tip.
Let me figure out how to do
you,
that.
That might have been your throwaway line, but to me, it's a marching orders. So we wanted to come back with a hurricane that could control the microclimate, not, you know, 10,000 miles of wildfire line, but as a fire approaches a community, a nuclear plant, a hospital, a school, if we could reverse the winds in that area, we could protect that asset, that specific asset or cluster of assets within the range of influence of jet engines. And then our next thought was, you know, this is a really cool gun, so to speak. You could shoot it at a fire, but where's it going to have the most impact? And I thought the corollary would be like someone goes hunting and you give them this great rifle, but no one ever showed them where the heart was of the elk or whatever the beast that they were after was. And so we needed to understand, you know, where are fires most vulnerable and what was the best way to deploy assets that we have. And so I started to think about Garry Kasparov, you know, that he thought he knew everything about chess and computers could never compete because they weren't creative. And lo and behold, he got his butt handed to him by IBM's Deep Blue. And then,
right.
And then that was the first time we showed that computers could tactically outthink people. And so I wondered, like, where are we going with that in wildfire?
Mm-hmm.
We're focusing all of this stuff on detection as if, like, oh, if we give the incident commanders more and more and more data, you know, they'll magically know what to do with it all and come up with the most efficient way to put out a wildfire. Well, if you think of a wildfire as 100 or 200,000 acre chessboard, you know, getting billions of pieces of data about what every air current and humidity and wind stream and whatever's going on, you know, that just creates an information overload. Might we need to deploy some AI that could interpret incoming data and then turn that into actionable plans? You've got X number of planes, you've got X number of people, you've got so many hatchets, you know, chewing gums, axes, whatever. What's the best way to deploy them under the circumstances as they are right now? Not 8 hours from now or 12 hours from now, the way incident plans are manually put together. But could an AI develop a real-time suppression plan that was based on up-to-the-minute data coming in from sensors and then say, here's the best, you know, I've gamed it out. Mm-hmm. Based on your 4 airplanes and your 30 helicopters, you know, this should drop here, this should shoot here, this should do that. That plane should then refill in this lake, this helicopter should go back to that swimming pool, right? And really give big computer brains the heavy lifting of figuring out the wildfire suppression plan for any given fire. So that became our second track, was developing a software called Deep Red.
Okay.
And Deep Red would develop a plan based on all the data rather than just be another source of data. Mm-hmm. Just going back in my personal life, one of my first, as a special effects coordinator for Hollywood.
I read that about I was
27 years old or something. And I had the responsibility of running the special effects department on a Tom Cruise movie. And I was stressed out the yin yang. And my younger brother was working with me on the project, and he gave me a cassette tape that should date this, right? And the cassette was like, it was called Managing Stress. And I looked it up and I thought, great, just what I need, another thing to manage. You know, so I see, you know, what's happening to incident commanders now and incident teams is like, people are thinking, oh, we'll give you enough data, you'll be able to figure it out, you know, but data overload is real. And
yeah.
And even if you have all the data and can interpret it all, figuring out what to do with it, you know, that, mm-hmm. that to me sounds like that's going to be an AI headache in the future, not a human headache.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I love, you know, just one of the things with XPRIZE, we're solution agnostic. And so there's so many different ways to approach the problem, and to hear just the creativity of saying, what would we do? What could be done, I think is one of the beauties of it. The other thing is just, while not every solution may be the winning team statement solution, doesn't mean it's not going to be a fantastic solution that could go out and do great things. And so I think that's, it's been so fascinating talking to innovators. Often people reach out who aren't competing. They're just really interested in, you know, that's kind great. Of like more generally, like why this prize? And there are a lot of solutions out there that are really interesting ways to solve problems. It's not the XPRIZE winning team statement problem, but it's still looking at wildfire from different approaches. And I think, you know, I'm new to this, knowing that a lot of the wildfire tech folks also are relatively new to it. It's a really exciting and just invigorating space to be in, because everyone is really looking at how do we solve these different aspects of what is the same problem.
Yeah. And wildfire being the most visual and visceral of the XPRIZEs to date, I think is going to be the one that the organization is able to get the most traction out of, just in terms of publicizing what XPRIZE is, because
I agree.
Know, right? Yeah. Like, you know, turn on any news station, the A block is, you know, what's burning.
Yeah. Right. Right?
Yeah. No matter how early, it could be an abandoned warehouse 300 miles from nowhere. But if the fire looks good, that's the A block story.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're really focused around the thing that is the easiest for which to get publicity.
Yeah. And that credit really goes to, I mean, the leadership at XPRIZE, you know, the way that they galvanize a community to help figure out what are the solutions we want to be able to put out there? What are the big problems to tackle? And so wildfire obviously was coming up. We're California based. And so a lot of folks from XPRIZE and from our ecosystem were experiencing, you know, these challenges personally. I would agree. I mean, what excites me about XPRIZE Wildfire is that it just feels that it's going to be so tangible. We're going to be able to see these solutions in the hands, again, of fire services around the world in the very near future, some already being deployed, you know, pieces of these solutions. And so I think that for me, just it feels like it it is not very often you get to work on something where you know that in a, the very, you know, in a very short timeline, 24 to 36 months, we will be able to witness what comes out of this. And hopefully it will, there will be lots and lots of teams that have their solutions being deployed around the world. And we're able to see kind of what are these different gains. And while early detection is just one piece, the benefit is if you can find the fire, again, the resources are smaller, but then the potential to, if you have a fire that's in the wrong place at the wrong time and you can get to it because you know it's there and you have those specifics, whether it's, you know, from space-based, you're relaying that information to the firefighters on the ground or the autonomous where, you know, potentially a solution is out there ready to deploy. I think that that is a really exciting and futuristic vision of what we could have.
It is. And the XPRIZE is really just the beginning. Because, you know, you might have, you know, you might have come up with like, these are the two XPRIZE winners, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, within the next 2 to 3 years. And then some other technology that either didn't win or didn't even compete, but was inspired by the publicity around your focus on solving this problem, you know, 10 years from now, that could be the dominant one and the one that won, you know, nobody's ever heard of again because something eclipsed it. So you like, but it all benefits us because as long as these technologies are leapfrogging each other, eclipsing each other, and at the moment, you know, each one is state of the art. And then, you know, 2 years later, or even faster, something newer or better is out there. So,
yeah, absolutely. Really,
you have a front seat to innovation, which has got to be one of the most fascinating places to be.
It definitely is. I mean, I think our whole team, we just really love being part of this prize and the community. And it's really just kicking off. You know, our first year was all about recruitment. Now we're really getting to learn what the teams are doing. And I think that, you know, the next 2 years, we're running through 2026. Okay. It's going to be just a really important and momentous time. I'm like, I don't know which, you know, what are the best adjectives to use, but
they all apply. Like, there's no one winning adjective.
No, there's definitely not just one. So, I mean, a lot of, we've been buckling down, pulling in a really great group of experts to help us along the way. And the teams, this is kind of these next few months is when we're going to really get to know more about the teams. Team summits, obviously something we're really looking forward to, which I'm sure all the teams are too. That's when they get to come together, meet each other in person, if they haven't already. And so that'll be a really, you know, one of kind of the first touch points where everybody gets to convene in person. Which especially after COVID, you know, it's really nice to be able to just think through that.
It is. For folks who want to follow the XPRIZE progress, what's the best way for them to do that?
Our website. So XPRIZE/wildfire. You can kind of follow the teams. We'll be putting updates up there as we move through the different rounds. You know, podcasts such as these, we're going to be at different conferences. So in the upcoming weeks, Jay Stalnecker is actually at South by Southwest this Thursday. He'll be on stage with other leaders in the wildfire community on Thursday at 2:30 PM Austin time. Okay. I think that is. And then we will also, be at Exponential in San Diego. FDIC for the team announcement, which is just a week before Exponential. We'll be also, what else do we have coming up? There's a couple other conferences that we'll be attending. You know, we've submitted different proposals, waiting to hear back. We're hoping to go back to AFAC in Australia. But a lot of our focus really is on testing and teams for the next 2 years. So kind of not leaving the conference circuit, but you know, we'll have our hands full with a lot of other events.
Very exciting. Yeah. Andrea Sandy, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking
the time. Thank you so much for having me. Here.
Absolutely. And we're all going to be following this prize, no matter where we are in the process related to it or not. Like, because what you're doing is inspiring people who are going to solve the most important problems of the future. Having some breathable air and other things like that, drinkable water. Right. So thanks so much for the work that you're doing.
Yeah. You know, we're excited to know that there's so many teams that are just getting out there and thinking through how to address this problem. So thank you for participating.
Thank you. This is Andrea Sandy. She's the project director for the XPRIZE Wildfire. It's easy to find XPRIZE Wildfire. Like, you'll be there and you'll be all over it. So that's terrific. Thanks again. You've been watching or listening to, I hope watching, because it's really more fun, The Fire Break. I'm Steve Wolf. We're sponsored by Team Wildfire. Check us out on the web. And we'll see you at the next one. Be well, take care, and be inspired. I am. Take care.
Thanks.